Hey everybody, yes, it is time. Grab your goat. On this one, you better grab a coat because it's a chilly one. But welcome to the Witches Movie Coven. I'm still waiting for what we do on that. We're working on it. I am one of your hosts, along with Black Phillip, and our other hosts are, start with you, Courtney.
Oh, that's me. I'm Courtney Buckley, host of on Scared Alone, Salem Witch Extraordinaire, and super excited to see what everybody thinks tonight.
And Black Phillip.
Oh, and yeah, and Black Phillip. We were just discussing his modesty.
I'm Jason. I've written a lot of Llewellyn books. This is probably my favorite one. The Horned God of the Witches. My Black Phillip is not leaking his innards for all to see. Some of us take care of our Phillips, Courtney.
I love mine too hard.
What you do in the privacy of your own room is your business.
Turn your light off.
And we're moving on. Beautiful Heather.
Hi, I'm Heather Green, and I'm the author of Lights, Camera, Witchcraft, A Critical History of Witches in American Film and Television, which is what we love to talk about here on this show. And here is my Black Phillip, since we've been introducing them. He is wearing a hat because he was a little chilly watching this movie, and because it's January in the South. It's beautiful. Below 50 degrees.
It is freezing here. And last and absolutely never least, Richard Leia.
I am Richard Leo. Richard Leo is one name, not two. If I were just Richard. Anyway, I guess we're going to introduce my Black Phillip. This is my Black friend. I am known as the Gentleman Psychic. I'm a psychic and a medium. I used to be a psychic and a small, but I gained a lot of weight. I didn't stand up until I that I could make more money on my back.
Well, I need to bring my husband with its snare drum and just rim shot our way.
Fine form tonight. Fine.
Hire him for next week.
I think, you know, I'm more purple today, so it's because lilac, this color, it looks berry grape on me. I did that on purple. I think it's marvelous.
No, I have to go. My internet, something's wrong with my internet, and I have to leave.
There it is. We need that snare drum, Patty.
I know. As soon as he gets home, I'm grabbing him. Anyway. This week, how is everybody? Please jump in that chat room. We want to hear your thoughts. We want to hear your questions. We want to hear everything that you have to say in a family show, that is. This week's movie, we are doing The Pale Blue Eye. I actually saw that last night for the very first time. It's a fairly new movie. I hope you guys watched it. But if not, if anybody did not watch it, Richard Lale, do we have a completely unbiased...
Oh, boy.
Yes, I do have an unbiased story. So the plot line is the fictionalized version of some real life historical events. It takes place about 1830, and there is a detective who is called to West Point in the Hudson. And along the way, he's trying to solve these murders that have happened, and it turns out that there was an officer who died. It was said that he unalived himself, though all of this sort of references made it impossible because he was seated, not hanging. And then while the body is in the morgue, someone comes in and violates the body by removing his heart. So this detective has been charged to solve these murders, this murder, and why, what's happening, why is this, why did these people murder him and then take his heart? And then along the way, he encounters Edgar Allan Poe, of course, the famous Edgar Allan Poe, but at this point, he was not that famous. He was famous. He was demi-famous. He was the Diet Coke of famous. Just one calorie. So he had published a few things, but he was not the famous Edgar Allan Poe in 1830. And So they go through a lot of twists and turns. They find out that there is a group of Satanists who are not only murdering people for their hearts, unaliving them via the neck, and then removing their hearts. They're also doing it to cows and goats, like Black Phillip, who has his heart ripped out from the other side. Anyway, it turns out that they have discovered that the murders have taken place in the ice house in the center of a triangle. I don't want to be in the center of a triangle. And then through all of this, more and more sort of mystery and intrigue, and then it comes out that it is actually the daughter of this chief officer. It's the daughter, and was it the son? I don't remember. But the children of this lead officer, and she has some rare disease. Of course, she's the love interest of Edgar Allan Poe, and she coughs a lot, so you know that she's probably going to die. It's 1830, and it's not just a cold. So she's passed out, and Edgar Allan Poe has tried to revive her, but it turns out that they are the killers. They are the ones, through the finding of a note, which I didn't tell you, there's a note in the hand of the dead guy and a shot in the back of his head. So he was definitely unalive when he was discovered. But anyway, Edgar Allan Poe works out that this, with the remnant of this note, he knows what it says. It's so easy for him to figure out by predicting what the word was before and the word was after. But it turns out that this love interest of Edgar Allan Poe is trying, they were removing the hearts of these hanged persons because it was some sort of spell that was to help her heal. And then there's a twist. And spoiler alert, the twist was the detective was the murderer, and he murdered them because his daughter had fled and was SA'd by these people at West Point. And he was systemically killing each and every one. And before he could make it look like that it was just an unaliving of them, of oneself, he was caught. And so then these people who were actually thought to be the murderers, they just needed the heart of a hanged man. They had nothing to do with the death. They could never actually bring themselves to actually kill people. And so in the final scenes, you figure out that his daughter, the detective's daughter, did not run away, as it was thought. That was the whole thing that was troubling him, that she did not run away. She had been abused and then unalived herself by leaping off of a cliff. And in the finalness, you find out that Edgar Allan Poe, he says, you know what, I know that these words are the same. I know the words are the same. I know that the handwriting is the same. The person tried to disguise it, but I know that it's you. I know you're the killer. And he says, so what are you going to do? These people are going to be forgotten about. What are you going to do? And he says, no, I loved her. I will never forget. Of course, you don't realize that he was actually married to his 13-year-old cousin, but it was 1838. Right. She is not his 13-year-old cousin. Anyway, back to the story.
Plot twist.
Right? So back to the story. As Edgar Allan Poe exits, he actually burns the note, destroying the evidence. And this detective goes back to the cliff where his daughter had unalived herself, and he releases the ribbon, and he tells her that he loves her, and he falls to his own death. End roll credits. Edgar Allan Poe writes The Raven. Wait, what? Did I miss something?
Do we know that he jumped?
I don't think he jumped.
That's up to for interpretation. It goes black before he does anything.
That is true.
He let the ribbon go.
Let the ribbon go, and he may or may not have unalived himself. It goes black.
He lets the ribbon go, and then the bat signal shines in the background.
That is true. That's it true. Is Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
So, yes, now that we all understand the movie with or without the ending, Heather, do you have any of your more social academic type things, whether it's probably not in your book, or is it in your book? It's
No, this came out after. It would have been included if it had been before it was published. So this came out in 2022. My book was published in 2021. So it would have made it. I would have counted this as a viable witch movie to discuss in some capacity. And I think this has a lot of things to talk about. And easily we can talk about the acting and the cast. We could talk about the ambiance and the cinematography, which is gorgeous, capturing the Hudson River School, capturing the mystery. There's a lot of things. We can talk about Christian Bale, who's a brilliant actor, has been in Hollywood forever, doing so many different things, from everything from Newsies to Batman to the Ford v Ferrari movie. He's just a variety of things that he's done. And we can talk about redemption and themes that are really interesting. Of course, the portrayal of the occult and how that fits in. But I think one of the things that's interesting, of course, is the Poe thing, because I think if you look at this movie, more than anything to me, it's a tribute to Poe. And I think that is, you know, and I'll talk about my opinions later, but I think you see that throughout, because from the details within this that actually touch him it's throughout. It's not just that he's there. He was a cadet for a year. Okay. So there are aspects that are the same. The pale blue eye is actually a line from The Telltale Heart. So in The Telltale Heart, his probably arguably his most famous story, Poe's main character wants to kill a person, this man, this old man, because he has this pale blue eye that pierces him. So you have that. You also have reference to The Pit and the Pendulum, which actually was made into a movie in the late 80s that has witches in it. Not what Poe did, but they added witches into it. We can do that another time. The Wood Plank, Pit and the Pendulum. You have him mentioning the poem, and he talks about Lenore. There is a Lenore poem, and then, of course, Lenore is mentioned in The Raven. You have a raven present. There is a story called Landor's Cottage, and Landor is the main character of this. Not connected, but the original author of the book that this movie was based on obviously was either a research Poe, a Poe fan or something, because he keeps touching on it throughout. There's all these things. The poem that Poe reads into Leah, the girl inside the movie, is not a real poem. It's not one of his poems. It was made up for the movie, but it points to Poe's actual work. So you see that throughout. The other interesting thing is some of the pieces when they talked to Poe was actually, I'm looking at my notes here, how many, he was known for shenanigans is what I read at when he was a cadet, causing problems, getting citations and demerits. And they mentioned that in the movie, he's going to get another demerit. And so he did cause a lot of, he didn't like being there. So he was actually finally discharged or expelled, I think is what it was, from the West Point Academy. So he did cause a little bit of problems. It was suspected that he murdered someone at some point. So there is some reality woven into this story, but a lot of it really was a tribute to Poe. And if you look at the ambiance, you look at the cinematography, it really captures Poe's own arc, gothic almost stories, and the themes of the interest in death and illness. And the touching of life and death together. These are all themes that run through Poe's work that also are seen here constantly. You know, everybody kind of dealing with this idea of someone dying or someone who's dead or someone talking to someone who's dead or relating to someone who is dead or dying in that relationship. So you see that here in this, as well as being what people consider often Poe is the father of American mystery and American horror and gothic horror. So you see that coming through in this movie. And one of the most interesting things for me was, what, aside from all this, because I could talk for hours on this topic, but was that I was sitting there during at one point and I was listening to the music. If you listen to the score, close your eyes and listen to the score, it's extremely haunting. And the first thing that I thought of when I was listening, I'm like, oh my goodness, all of the sudden I'm thinking of Clarice Starling. And I looked at the writer of the music score, Howard Shore, for this movie was the same score for Silence of the Lambs. The music. So if you listen to the score of Silence of the Lambs and listen to the score of this, you will see it is unmistakable. And it's that haunting sound that just permeates it and sits there almost like the fog, the cold fog, and it mirrors it beautifully. So you see that too, all capturing what Poe was about. And so I think this movie is more a tribute to Poe and than it is anything else. But there's a lot of other things we can talk about, the characters. But that's, I just wanted to set that up because I think that's what this movie really presents to the most powerful part of this movie to talk about.
Okay, I will go next. I don't know what to say. I'm just going to talk about how I felt watching it. I have never been so cold watching a movie in my entire life. Truly, I'm sitting here with my heater that I'm always sitting with. And just this beautiful cinematography, the haunting music, the beautiful performances by everybody. I felt the empty, lonely, cold. I literally was like shivering in my own boots in my 80-degree house. So I immensely enjoyed not enjoying it, if that makes sense, because I don't like to be cold and I don't want to be so lonely, spooky, but I loved it. I'm a fan of murder mysteries. I ran a murder mystery company for 20 years. It was a beautiful murder mystery in itself. And my computer wants to update. No. No, not now. And so I just love that. The characters were great, especially the main two. Their relationship together was beautiful. That could have been it in itself for me. And again, just enjoyed the mystery, enjoyed it all. Next.
I'll go. I haven't gone yet. I feel like it took me 2 tries to watch this movie and I only got halfway through. And that is not a testament to me not being in the right headspace to watch this movie. The cinematography was beautiful. Like, I couldn't tear my eyes away from that. I loved the characters. I loved the performances. Edgar Allan Poe in this movie particularly is a whole mood. And I have quotes. I was furiously writing down quotes. But I found myself enjoying the characters so much that I had to stop and be like, I don't even know what's happening. I like what they're doing and I like what they're saying, but I've lost the plot entirely. And it was really hard for me to follow, I think, because it was very slow, which I think it should have been because it sets the tone nicely. But it dragged on and I was literally exactly halfway and I was like, my brain can't take it anymore. And I just couldn't get through it. And I still don't think I didn't like it. I think I did like it, but it was just really hard. And I have to say that I realized something about myself while watching this movie and seeing Edgar Allan Poe inviting a girl out on a date to a cemetery. I thought that's why I don't date, because I've been waiting for Edgar Allan Poe my whole life. And there it is. But yeah, I have a lot of opinions about it and I'm torn because I feel like it probably was. And then I looked it up. I looked up the ending, which I'm now mad that I did because I spoiled it for myself. And usually I avoid spoilers and I think it would have been really good, but I couldn't get there.
We have a theme going here. Soon it's going to be the first half of the movie quotes by Courtney.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks in a row.
It's been, the holidays are a hard time for me.
They're over.
I know, but my depression is not. So I'm working on it.
It's okay, Courtney. It took me 3 different watches to get through this movie.
Okay, it wasn't just me this time.
I started it this morning. I didn't finish it this morning. And then I tried to wait for lunch. And I didn't finish it during lunch. And then I finished it while I was prepping for dinner later. It took me a while. I'm probably not a fan of this movie like the rest of you. But before I discuss the pluses and minuses, I want to talk about the magic a little bit, because I hate some of these movies where they always like, oh, it's magic. And it's like this big mystery to people that they've never seen before. Or they're like, oh, we just recognize that this is a weird symbol. So they must be doing magic. People in the 19th century used magic. They used a lot of magic. It was practically everywhere, especially in rural areas. It was not some sort of weird, unique thing that was going to surprise people. Some of the best-selling books in the United States in the 19th century were magical grimoires. And I just,
especially in the 1830s.
Yes, it just always drives me crazy how, like, they make it to be something that is so taboo that no one would have ever seen before. And that's just not the case.
And not only, but also not only magic grimoires, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but not only magic grimoires, but Freemasons and Oddfellows and other mystery schools. It was everywhere. It was everywhere.
And especially in New York, of all states. New York is where...
New York was the spiritual...
The hotbed of weird spiritual movements in the United States during that particular period of time.
But I wonder, Jason, on that point of the mystery schools and the magic, I'm wondering, in 1830, though, because the great disappointment of 1848, that was years later. So the Fox sisters, they were 1838? So... It's early, because it was really the Fox sisters who really sparked a lot of it. But
you still got the Mormons and stuff getting ready to percolate, and people were out looking for magical treasures and all sorts of things. It was a very magical society in a lot of ways. Now, these people didn't think they were doing anything occult-like. It was just like being a blacksmith, somebody using magic. It was just something that you did, because that was how you got through things. It wasn't probably as esoteric as we make it out to be, but it was there and it was present. And it's always like this, no way could that be present. And it's just, no, it was. And it's something history and movie makers don't ever really talk about. Paul, I've made everyone silent.
Can I interject here?
Silent.
Yes.
No, I'm having internet problems. I don't know if I'm frozen right now or not.
We can hear you.
I think I'm not frozen. Yeah. Okay. So reality, and I'm actually about to write it, and I've written a number of articles about this, and I address this all the time. So Hollywood is not going to be reality. And that's just the fact. It does not, for a lot of reasons, but not to go on for hours, but I'm about to do some work on, I actually have written an article about this, but when Hollywood began, and the language of Hollywood and training us on how to understand movies and read movies, because we do have a specific language, everything was put in a specific place. We have a certain way of visual language, poetry of how movies speak to us. And one of the things is how the occult and witchcraft is presented. Now, clearly, but then it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, but that language was written specifically by people who were, they were Catholic, and it was written for a specific agenda. And that was the word, our language of our American Hollywood were created. So when you have a cult presented, even today in this world, it is something that is sinister. It's used for a purpose. It's symbolic. It will be very rare if that ever changes to the degree that we would like to see it to be changed. It is ingrained in the way Hollywood speaks to us. So we have that thought. It's not going to be, it's the reality of the way it was. They can't even get the reality of the way the 1950s were, the way the 1940s were.
I get that, Heather, and I don't expect my movies to necessarily always be realistic, but I always think it's worth pointing out, because I think we've this picture of society where they just didn't use magic. You know, it's all of a sudden, witches came back in the 50s and 60s. And all of this stuff has always been there and always will be there. And I shouldn't expect very much from Hollywood.
No, I think pointing it out is important, because there are stories to be had around that. And I think it's changing. As you know, these things are folk magic. They're the magic of the people. They're, like you said, they're around every culture, everywhere, even today. And I think it's worth pointing out. We just keep pointing it out. Maybe the presentations today of witchcraft are way better than they were in 1960, 1950, 19. They change. And that was the whole point of my book, was to see exactly what was going on. So the story's not finished yet. So yes, we should point them out.
I did think it was funny, though, that they specifically blamed Satanists in 1830, which there were diabolists, because by like Lord Byron, Mary Shelley, they were called diabolists. They didn't actually believe in devil, but there was no such thing as Satanists in those days. So I didn't find that funny. But who am I? I'm just a po' boy. Nobody loves me. Galileo, Galileo, Figaro.
I'm going to chime in on what my opinion of this movie is here. And so just from my earlier thing, you can tell there's aspects of this film that I love the expression of Poe. I love Poe in general, just one of my favorites of American literature. And so I love all that. I think the acting was superb. I think Gillian Anderson was, I wanted her to be better. I love Gillian Anderson in her new form that we see her in now with her mature woman stuff. She's really good. I think she went a little over the top at points and I was like, okay, that's a little much for me here. But generally speaking, she was fun to watch. Poe is on point. And I don't think if anybody's pointed out, you may recognize him from Harry Potter, or maybe you won't recognize him from Harry Potter.
I didn't. Yeah. I've never seen Harry Potter.
Yeah, so he was Dudley Dursley, which you have to do a double take on that. But I think his southern accent was a little bit generic.
It wasn't quite right.
It was terrible. Yeah.
It was not quite right, was it?
It was not good.
Yeah, I tell you, I did love the movie, but that southern drawl was really annoying. And I couldn't quite understand why he was so generically southern.
And Poe grew up in Virginia, and so he wouldn't have had that accent anyway. It was like borderline Savannah with a little bit of North Carolina in there, and I think only people from the South would have recognized the differences in Southern accent.
No, I'm not from the South, and I heard Savannah.
Yeah, he tried the Savannah. It was not, so that was a little problematic, but I'm going to be honest, Christian Bale is quickly becoming my favorite modern Hollywood actor. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he is up there with Jimmy Stewart for me, let's be honest. So I always enjoy seeing him act. So I did not have a problem with it being slow. I did not have a problem with any of it. I was totally right there with it. I was crying in the end scene. I'm going to be on. Yes. He tells him at the end when he's sitting there, he said, "If you had only met my daughter before they had, we could have been family." I was bawling. And the first time in the whole movie, Poe has nothing. He has no words. He's so choked up, he can't even speak, which is not the case in the entire rest of the movie. So I think it's a beautiful moment between the two at the very end, that exchange at the end. And I love this. I love the complications in the story of morality. Is it justified? Was he justified in killing these people because they raped his daughter? And then you compare that to the Satanists who were doing this black magic or whatever they called it. I can't remember. They had a name for it to save their daughter. What was that?
Necromancy? Did they use that?
I don't remember. I can't remember all the names, but they were actually doing this work to save their child. So you have this comparison there of the morality, who's wrong. They didn't kill anybody. They took the heart, although they looked like they were about to kill Poe at one point. And then the other guy, he killed a couple of people, but they had his daughter, who eventually then, what did you say?
Unalived herself.
So there's a morality. Who's the worst? Who's the one that we can't offer redemption to as viewers? So there's a lot of cool stuff going on there. A lot of things to think about that are very present in modern films that kind of, where's the morality in it? So I love that. I love that kind of concept. See that also in the movie we watched, Pumpkinhead in the 80s, where you have that question of morality. Is it okay? Is it justified? Do the means justify the ends, et cetera? So it's nice. There's a lot of things in it. So I did enjoy it. I did not have trouble watching it through. I was right there with it. And I love the fact that he went on his first date in the cemetery as well, Courtney. I did not fall asleep, Jason.
nobody ever, like, there's the bar is set so high now for me that nobody better ask me out on a date unless it's to a cemetery.
Courtney, my lovely.
With the talking tree.
The only reason that no one has gone on a date with a cemetery with you is because that would be me and I am very gay. So,
well, we can go on a gay friend date to the cemetery. New Orleans.
That would be lovely. That, but I'm going to tell you, I don't love New Orleans cemeteries. I just don't.
Valid. You would want to know.
Come back to New England. Come back to New England to the old spooky New England cemeteries, and then come up here, and then we'll have a friend date in the cemetery.
I think that is that's a date. That sounds like a plan.
No, I was just, we met at a cemetery, you and I, for the very first time ever at Hollywood Forever.
We did. And I love that cemetery.
I love that. You look so, Frankie Brunk's like, another friend of mine is coming along. And I'm like, who is this wonderful? We did a photo shoot. I don't even know why we did the photo shoot.
Yeah, right. We do that photo shoot. I don't remember that photo shoot. But I miss, as far as cemeteries go, I do miss Hollywood Forever. Because Rudolph Valentino, who is my very first crush, is buried there. And I lived not far. I just lived across the street. So I would come in and whenever I would feel like I was dejected or I was lost from Hollywood, I would go in and I would say, oh, Rudy, I love you. I need you. But I did love this movie. I tell you, I did watch it once upon a midnight dreary while I pondered weak and weary. And I thought, yes, it is. The story was in depth. And yes, there were times that it was very quiet. But I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was incredibly beautiful. I loved the fact that they actually filmed in Pennsylvania because it looks a lot like the Hudson, but it's not the Hudson. It's actually Pennsylvania. They borrowed the weaponry. The costumes were brilliant. The acting was breathtaking. It really made me miss the Hudson. But to be fair, it also made me miss the Hudson of 170 years ago, which I remember distinctly. Oh, distinctly, I remember in the bleak of December.
I don't know, Richard Lyle, when they were standing on the cliff and he's looking out across the Hudson. And he sees the mountains. I'm looking at, and I grew up right on the Hudson River. Okay, way further down from where they were. The West Point wasn't that far from where I grew up. When you look out, I don't think the mountains look like that. Like, I was looking, because the mountains are more like cliffs on the Hudson. They're not like these rolling hills. And I'm like, yeah, that's supposed to be the Hudson, but that's not what the mountains look like.
It's Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they're rolling. And I think it was Western Pennsylvania, too. So whatever river that was like a Pittsburgh, was like the Pittsburgh area. So I'm like, yeah, they're cliffs off the Hudson. They needed to just shave the top of those off and it would have looked more authentic. But yeah, it's a beautiful part of the country. At least it was at one point.
I loved how whenever they were showing where the army go, the place, always guys marching. Every time there would be this beautiful precision line. Every time it was part of the whole scenario. That stuff just beautifully stood out for me. Yeah.
And that was one of the quotes. I don't know if Courtney has that quote that I enjoyed, is the one where he talks about how they take away a person's freedom.
I don't have that one, but as someone who spent 6 months in basic training, I tend to avoid all military things. Because that was a long time ago and I'm still not over it.
Well, it's fair. I think it's fair.
I'm gonna jump in. I did not join the military, but I did almost accidentally join the Navy once because I thought that I liked the uniforms and I thought it was going to be like South Pacific. And I called them, I said, I just want information. They said, we can't give you any information until you take this test. And I went, okay, I'll take it back. Why not? So they said, okay, that was great. Now you just have to go to Kansas City and take this other test. And I went, okay, I'm just taking a test. And then I get on the bus and then I realize that with all of these other people that they're going to enlist, they're taking their ASFAB.
You're right.
Anyway, they're going to take the, and then it's supposed to be like a 3-hour test. I took it in 30 minutes. And then I went, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here.
Wait, well, that's,
why are you here? I said, we like the uniforms. Well, they're very pretty.
Do you
want to know a secret? Want to know a secret about when I took my ASFAB? I enlisted to be a police officer in the Air Force. and no one could talk me out of it. That's what I was going to do. And that was it. The end. And I took my test and my scores because they put little pictures in front of me and they were like, this, put this together, like with the pictures, right? And I was like, what? I know how to do this. And they were like, so we can't let you be a cop because we want you to build and test nuclear weapons because your brain is programmed to be able to do that. And I was like, cool. So that was supposed to be my thing, but I was only going to be trained for 6.5 weeks after basic training to do that. So I felt like either that's what my test told me, told them that I was capable of doing, or nuclear weapons, they just wanted a body in front of the nuclear weapons in case something went wrong. So I still to this day don't know.
I'm just thinking, though, that if you join the Navy, that song is banging, though. They have the best.
In the Navy.
They have the best theme song.
We don't own the rights to that song.
Yeah.
There's a question in the chat. There's a question in the chat about why couldn't they use the actual Hudson instead of Pennsylvania? And that usually has to do with patient scouting and taxes and the cost of shooting. And you'd be amazed at the differences. When I was working in New York in the film industry, we were supposed to be shooting a commercial that was set in front of a brownstone in New York City. So meanwhile, I was in New York City. Okay. So we're setting up for this commercial. It was cheaper for us to hire a crew and send people and the producers and everyone down to Florida, to Walt Disney World, who has a backlot, which has a New York City set, and shoot on set in Florida, in Orlando, at their backlot, than to actually shoot in New York City, legitimately. So that's usually what it has to do with. So it probably was too expensive for them to actually set up on the Hudson River, around the Tappan Zee Bridge or whatever they call it now, and which is where this is supposed to take place, or actually at West Point. It probably was too expensive and they found a better place.
And I also wonder too, New York along the Hudson is much more developed now than Western mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. So yes. I wonder if it would have been also not only taxes and fees and all of that, but also I wonder about the actual backdrop of how much editing would they actually have to do in post to make it look like it did 180 years ago.
That's true. If you get far enough up the Hudson, there are blank spots still. At least there was when I was living there. But where West Point is not nearly like it was. That's probably another factor for sure.
Yeah. And a lot of states really do give really big incentives to film companies to come to our state. That means they'll help hire their people. I know people, we got to shoot in this state because they give you money. That's it.
Yep. And Georgia's big now. That's why we're called the Hollywood of the South at this point. It's like crawling with lots and lots of, I just watched a Marvel movie and they get the Georgia, made in Georgia thing. We get it. We have it all. In fact, I was doing extra background work for a while when they first started doing it, but I don't have time for that. Those are stories we won't talk about now.
Oh my, I knew I saw you in some of those films. I'd be like,
you probably
oh my
God. Did.
Wife, look, that's Heather Green.
No. I did it for a while and then I was like, no, I'm a human prop and I'm not sitting here any longer and I don't have time for this. So I had little kids and I didn't have time for it to continue. But right. Yeah, that's your human furniture is pretty much what it is. But anyway, so that's a big piece. I know when my dad was shooting, he was going up to Vancouver. It was cheaper to film in Vancouver across the border than it was here in the States and in LA even where they have all the stuff set up. So yeah, that's a lot of it. And like you said, they might have gotten a better vantage point with rural Pennsylvania.
Because I've been both on the Hudson and in rural Pennsylvania. And rural Pennsylvania, outside of the fact that the cliffs do not look like, it doesn't look like the Hudson River. Right. The trees still, there's a lot of trees, which was what New York was. I think though I just looked at the time. What about Jason's movie minute or Courtney's quotes?
Oh yeah.
It's Courtney goes first, I think. That's the rule.
All right.
First half.
Okay, so I even though I watched half the movie, I have a full movie's worth of quotes, I feel like. I was furiously typing. In the beginning, when they said, Dr. Marquis, how does a person go about doing this? And he says, scalpel, or any good sharp knife would do. And I thought, me and my bone collection agree. I like that. Poe was by far, there it is. Poe was by far my favorite character, obviously. And I felt like I was starting to write down every single thing he was saying because he was amazing. But my favorite part was when he goes into the house. I think it's the house of the detective guy. And he sees his bookshelf and he screams, "Books!" And then he like runs over to them and he says, "You have never interested me more." And then, of course, there's his poem that he recites to the cadets, which I'm gonna recite because it's not, there's no bad words in it. But he said, "I met a lewd nude in Bermuda who thought she was shrewd, I was shrewder. She thought it quite crude to be wooed in the nude. I pursued her, subdued her, and screwed her." And I was like, yes, thank you, get it. Then the whole cemetery date scene, which obviously, hello. But the girl, Leo was her name, said, "The cemetery? How interesting." And he said, "Yes, I certainly think so." And I thought, are we the same person? This is great. One of my, the next three were, I feel like very, they spoke to me personally. So I really liked them and they're not as funny. But he said, "I do consider death to be poetry's most exalted theme." Mm-hmm. And I really liked that. And then she said to him, Leah said, "How well it sits on you, morbidity, suits you better than your uniform." And then my all-time favorite one, which I would fully get tattooed on my body, is, "At times, I believe the dead haunt us because we love them too little." I thought that was beautiful. Yep.
That is beautiful. And his point after that was exactly like Coco's, was to remember. It was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Thank you. Beautiful. And Jason? Do we have our Mankey movie minute?
We do. You all are not going to like it because, as I said,
I am going to turn my light off, Jason.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Everyone should have a light that can turn on and off.
I can't, like, actually, but I can unlock it.
I didn't like this movie as much as the rest of you. So my opinion of it is really different. So here we go. It's the wackiest detective team up in the history of Netflix. Meet Edgar Allan Poe, a wannabe poet stuck at West Point playing soldier. Edgar dreams about being a ladies' man and perhaps even making a friend. And then there's Augustus Lando Calrissian, a grizzled old detective with a love of fine drink and facial hair. Together, Edgar and Lando will help solve a murder, or murders, because the dead keep piling up. In a pre-UFO world, mutilated cows and sheep can only mean one thing. Satan. And we aren't talking about Richard Lale's car, Mr. Satan. No. We are talking the black arts here. Serious stuff. In order to get to the heart of the matter, Edgar Allan Poe will use his poet skills to infiltrate a secret gambling ring at West Point and fall madly in love with a blonde woman whose mother puts an X in the murder files of Poe and Lando. What will happen to our dashing detectives when the evidence leads them deep into the realm of a family that worships Satan and talks to the dead? Poe knows you can't talk to a psycho like a normal human being. You can only talk to psychos if you are one of the world's greatest detectives. And then, after the movie starts to get interesting for 10 minutes, two people burn to death, and we find out that Lando Calrissian has been helping the Empire all along. Quote the Raven, "Don't give me any more."
That might be your best one yet. I would probably have watched that movie, that one that you watched, the whole way through.
I would really turn my light off so bad if I could reach it.
Me too.
I can't reach it.
See, I was worried about that. I thought that was a real possibility. Well, that
why?
I'm not going to hold it against you personally, Jason. I'm just going to disagree with you. And I'm going to. We're just going to have to watch The Sword and the Stone to make you happy. To make it up to you, we will watch The Sword and the Stone.
Heather, I've never been so proud to be your friend than I am right now.
Learn from you.
I noticed.
I would have much rather watched a buddy team up with Lando Calrissian and Edgar Allan Poe. Right, that would have been really fun, and it could have set off a whole chain of fun Netflix detective films starring this unlikely duo. That would have been really great.
It would have been great.
But you have to admit the casting was really good. And the fellow who played the captain or whatever he was, whose daughter was the Satanist.
The doctor, Toby Jones. Doctor. I love Toby Jones.
Yeah. That Toby Jones was actually a real person. And the casting, they are the real one and the actor are like the same person. It's amazing. So the casting was great. This is, of course, Dudley Do-Right as Edgar Allan Poe.
Who's Dudley Do-Wrong in the Harry Potter? Let's not sugarcoat that.
Can I just point out that Jason said that he loves Toby Jones? And do you know what other movie Toby Jones was in?
He was in Hit Your Highness.
Yes. Yeah. And so therefore, Jason loves Your Highness. And he just admitted to it. So I would like a clip of that, please. Blast it on the internet. Thank you. I will take no questions. I will take no comments. That was it.
Toby liked to work and would often demean himself by being in less than stellar productions.
Wow.
And then, you know, he steals the show. In Captain America, Winter Soldier. He's so good as a computer program. Oh, my God. I love him so much.
And on those love note, it is time to vote. One's up or one. One thing can I say about that girl? To me, it just looked like she had a bad cough. She was not coughing up blood. And epilepsy.
She had epilepsy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Epilepsy.
Yeah. You should
have said the epilepsy. They suggested the epilepsy was caused by her talking to her dead grandfather, great-grandfather. It was caused. So what her actual illness was before that, I'm not sure.
As someone who just recently survived tuberculosis, I felt represented when she was coughing in 1830 because I, too, had ghosts in my blood. And clearly I just was seen this whole movie. I should probably give it a higher rating than I'm about to. But
here we go. Wands up, wands down, wands neutral.
Ooh, Edgar Allan Poe book.
It is. And it's, you know what? It's going up because especially when Jason hates it. So I'm going to go green.
I don't hate it completely. I mean, that's a really great cast. There's some nice performances. It goes on too long. And then there's that weird total shift at the end. And I'm not sure that it really is justified or that it works.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. It was chilly and beautiful. Yes. All right. We've got, it's very mixed all the way around. A lot of neutrals on this one, between down and neutral. But let's talk next week. What am I saying next week? Do we have any
midnight offerings?
Midnight offerings. Okay.
So this one is only available, I think we discovered, on YouTube. It's not the best way to watch a movie, but it's a YouTube. You can't find it anywhere else, but it's a fun one to see because I like to call it a proto-craft movie. So it'll give us an opportunity to talk about
All right. So midnight offerings for next week. We have a few minutes left. We are into the new year. We were halfway through the new year. Who has anything coming up anybody wants to talk about?
I'll start.
Oh, Heather will start.
Yeah. I'll start. So I just got notice that I'm going to get to present at Charles Oz in September. So that's not till September, but it's really exciting because I just got a message, which Charles Oz is a Wizard of Oz convention in Charlotte. So I'm very excited. And the keynote speaker is Gregory Maguire, who wrote Wicked. So I'm super excited about that. So I am going to be doing a lot of presentations and traveling starting in March. So we get to that. But I do want to encourage anybody who wants to come to Mystic South. We have everything open. So buy tickets, send in presentation proposals, get your hotel rooms. We are full board getting ready to go. So it's super exciting. That's in July. So those are a couple of the things that have come up my way.
Thank you. Richard Lowell.
Oh, I'm here in New Orleans. I'm the Gentleman Psychic. We have Mardi Gras coming up very soon, which is like the 14th of February. No, the 13th of February. And then, of course, it's Valentine's Day. You know, come down and see me. I might be naked or at least semi-naked. So it's, I know I have to dress for every occasion, right? So come and see me. I'll be doing readings here. You can find me at thegentlemanpsychic.com. Also, just so you know, there are fakes out there who on all of the media of social, I'll never contact you. You can contact me, all of that, whatnot.
I got followed by one yesterday. And I was like, you are not my friend. And I reported them immediately.
Funny thing was, this person, this one of them followed a contacted a friend of mine and says to her, spirits tell me you need reading and my dear heart emoji of crystal ball. The spirit says you really need to come get reading and I am busy. I cannot do phone reading. I must only do over text. And then she says, Richard, I'm so delighted to actually meet you. And oh, yes, spirit say you are welcome to be here. Crazy craziness. Anyway, she played with him for a while. Richard.
I know. That's the first line.
You, that's obvious. That's funny. Jason?
When their name is Richard Fail, I'm like, no, my friend's name is Richard Lale, and her name is not Natty Negri, it's Patty Negri. I was like, they're not even good at this. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Wrong a lot, yeah.
Starting next month, I will be on the road a lot at various pagan festivals. Convocation in near Detroit, Michigan, then Paganicon, which is near Minneapolis, Minnesota, Phoenix Festivals, which is in Florida, 2 hours from any airport that I can fly into, and then Sacred Space, which is near Baltimore, Maryland. So I'm really excited to be back on the road soon, as much as I love being home. And next week, this is not about really anything. I'm just going to be in LA and I'm going to get to hang out with Patty. And I'm going to get to hang out with our producers of the show. And I'm just so excited that I get to make that trip next week.
Yay. All right. Brittany.
Oh, that's me. So coming up, we have our annual anti-Valentine's Day tour in Salem. So you can visit salemghosttours.com. Tickets are on sale. It is Stories of Love Gone Wrong. And it was written by me because I hate Valentine's Day. Or it was partially originally written by me. It's taken on its own life now. But mostly because no one has asked me out on a date in a cemetery yet. So now you get art from that. Right. But we have friend date, not Valentine's Day love date. Still, you get. Also, I'm very excited. I just want to share this. I got to go see Beetlejuice, the musical, which I'm sure you guys have talked about before, that I love so much. I saw it in May and I haven't stopped listening to the soundtrack since. And this past weekend, it was in my state again. And I got to see it not once, but twice in a row. And it was glorious, and I loved it, and it was great. So, hooray for me. And that's
it. Yay, thank you. Yeah. All right, me, everybody else. Okay, anybody in LA, in 2 days, Friday night, we are doing a Vampire Babylon Salon. We are celebrating Father Sebastian's 490th birthday, so it should be very special. Next week, I will be in Virginia at Vern Paracon. Some tavern Paracon. I don't have a cute little graphic yet because I didn't give her Hanover. Thank you, producer Rob. Hanover. I can never remember because it's called Hanover. Hanover Terracon. And February, the big LA ball. We just moved to the Mayan, which is going to be really, really exciting. And then I'm on the road. I just booked Michigan Paracon. I just got Penthurst. I've got Old Globe in Phoenix. I've got Spirits in the Sky, wherever that is. So I'm going to make my little list so we can get little graphics. But go to pattynegri.com. You can find everything. Please, with all of us, like us, follow us. It makes a difference in whatever world of this media world. So on our social media, like us. Tell your friends about this. If you like our show, bring them in. And that's it. Tabitha will be there. Yay. We'll be somewhere. Tabitha. I don't know where, but she's going to be here because the voice of the gods just told me that.
I feel like we're going to find Courtney a Valentine's Day date on this show. Did you see that? We need to go man watching.
I cannot see the comments. I can't see them.
I will say natural born witch. They say, yes, I need to go love. I need a love date in a cemetery too, Courtney. Too bad Richard is battling for the opposite, battling with the other team. It's Richard Lale. Just so you know, that's how you know that I'm not the fake one, Richard Lale.
Because the fake one is.
Yeah. We need to go man watching.
We need to go man watching. I see it now.
I don't need to go man watching. I just need a suitor who will approach me in my natural habitat, which is sweatpants and this, while I'm playing video games and being by myself, and then propose a date in the cemetery to me.
I have a gentleman suitor in my sweatpants, and I am coming and knocking on the door of one Courtney Buckley, who is wearing sweatpants and playing some video games. Oh,
you sound like you're from the cemetery.
A fake southern accent. There it is.
To Cleo.
All right.
We already talked like.
So,
Foghorn Leghorn.
We have one last thing to do. I don't know. Should we do it with a bad southern accent or cackle? Or
I do declare that we should.
I think so. One more thing to do, and we want all of you out there to do it with us. Our very best overdone, over slow southern.
Oh, no. 1, 2, 3.